You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hello, and welcome to the Marketing Distilled Podcast. My name is Jonathan Gaby, and I'm your master distiller here on the show. On this podcast, you'll hear from industry experts as well as myself to learn more about marketing and taking those complicated and hard to understand topics and distill them down into actionable strategies and tactics for your business, organization, or brand. So whether you're new to marketing, social media, digital marketing, heck, anything online, or you've been doing this for quite some time, you're sure to hear something new, get a fresh perspective, or reinforce what you've learned. You might even get a new idea for your next marketing campaign, product, or service. And in this episode of the Marketer and the Marketing Distilled Podcast, I'm going to discuss what I think is the marketer's dilemma. Recently, I sat down on my couch and decided to watch a documentary that I'd heard about on Twitter and social media circles and whatnot. And that documentary is called The Social Dilemma. As I said before, it's a documentary / drama hybrid that explores many of the issues surrounding social media, like Facebook, YouTube, Google, Twitter, Pinterest, and more. Former executives from these groups led a discussion on the negative side of social media and the consequences that social media have brought us. In this episode, we're going to break the movie down and share with you some issues that I think marketers should pay attention to. At the core, I think this is an ethics issue, but I hope not to persuade you one way or the other. Rather, I want to show you the things that I learned and what I gleaned from watching this documentary and hopefully help you make your own decisions. Not necessarily call you to action, but call you to reflection. So in this episode, we're going to talk about that. The first thing that I think is necessary for us as marketers in this dilemma that we find ourselves in now is really, one, to understand the nature of social media from the perspective of the social media business and then the user. Every social media company's business model is really about three things, and those are engagement, growth, and ad revenue. So what are we really talking about? You guys might actually know what these things are, but if you don't, I'm here to explain them to you. First is engagement. Engagement is defined by the amount of attention that users spend on the platform, both in time spent on social media and what they are spending their time on. So it's not just how much time they spend in total, say, on Facebook or TikTok or Pinterest or their email or whatever. It's actually measuring what they are paying attention to. So that's like photos and videos and various Facebook status updates, that kind of thing. Then we get into growth. Now, as the social media or the social dilemma has defined it, it's the amount of new users that sign up to a platform and then are engaged in the platform. See, it's not enough that Facebook or Twitter, they keep the same people engaged. No, shareholders and people who are financing these companies are wanting to know how much more growth in terms of user base that they are experiencing year over year, quarter over quarter, week after week, that kind of thing. So growth is the amount of users that come onto the platform and then engage with the content on the platform. Finally, the third part of this business model is ad revenue. And we all know what that is. It's the amount of money that social media companies earn by showing the user ads that users would be most interested in. So really, though, social media companies are all fighting for and clamoring for the same thing, and that is the user's attention. You should know well the well-known quote that says, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. So social media companies are not in the business of looking after the user's best interest, but rather to increase their time, your time, on the platform so that more money can be made from companies who are placing ads in the news feed or anywhere else they can place an ad. So that's kind of the breakdown of the social media company's business model. And they all pretty much follow the same kind of three-legged stool, as it were, engagement, growth, and ad revenue. So now that we've discussed it from the business's perspective, let's talk about it from the user's perspective. So what's the user's experience? Well, the social dilemma highlights a couple things. One is that many executives at Facebook, Twitter, and Google were all students in classes at universities where they taught classes and learned what's called persuasive technology, how technology is used to persuade and actually change people's behavior. So we notice elements of this technology every single day. If you're just paying the least bit of attention, you can see what social media companies are doing with their product, with their service. Notifications on your phone. You know what that is. The little red dot with the number in it, a ding, a lighting up of the phone, or a banner, or some other attention-grabbing thing. They study this and they figured that notifications are the first part of a multi-part system to both get your attention and keep your attention. And here's another thing. You've been tagged in a photo. Think about this. The act of tagging your friends in a photo does a number of things. Not only, you know, if you keep your emails turned on from Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, they will send you an email to say, Sally has tagged you in a photo. But wisely, they say, or wisely they do this, they don't show you the picture on the email. Why is that? Well, clearly it's because they want you to click on the link or click somewhere in the email or go out of your email to the social media platform, Facebook, Twitter, that kind of thing, and find this photo that Sally has tagged you in. It's slick, right? And then they figure this out too. A fellow by the name of Ezra Rankin developed what's called the infinite scroll. And you know what this is. You get your phone or you've got your device and you're on Facebook or Twitter and you keep scrolling through your newsfeed. It never stops. It never stops. It never stops. And what that's trying to do is condition you to constantly check and constantly get little hits of dopamine. And, you know, that feel-good hormone that most people experience when they are on Facebook. And it gives you an infinite number of things that you can engage with. There is no limit. So you're always scrolling, because there's always something there to find out new. You can never get to the bottom of your news feed. Another thing that they do for notifications or to grab your attention and keep it are those little ellipsy bubbles. You know, that thing where the little three dots pop up when someone's typing out a text message or typing out a comment on a Facebook post that they made. It's these little things that are designed to keep you looking at the device, looking at the social media platform. It's that expectation, you know, as you see those little three dots blink on your screen, you're like, what are they going to say? Are they going to talk about me? What are they going to do? It's that unknown that keeps people glued to the Facebook or the Twitter or the Instagram or whatever the social media platform is. One thing I think is interesting is that nowadays Facebook is presenting you with posts that you made in the past. And so every day I get a notification within Facebook that says, you have memories to look back on today. And even not only just a generic message, like you have memories to look back on, they will say you have memories with your friends. You have memories with Becky. You've got memories with John, and you've got memories with Sally to look up and to look at, further enticing you to click and to scroll and to engage with this social media company. And you clearly want to know, well, I forget what happened last year. What happened 2 years ago? Just the other day, I was looking at my Facebook feed and it let me know what my memories were. And a couple years ago, my wife and I were living in a rented house, and there was big rains and big things going on, big storms. And it just so happened that our backyard just flooded. And I think our basement flooded too. So we clearly talked about that. It's like, do you remember this? And she said, yes, I do. And we reminisced about our time at Pickett Avenue when the backyard flooded from the rain. Here's another thing that they do. Other friends' engagement. Hannah liked a photo. Well, they don't show you what the photo is in the little notification list. They encourage you to click on that photo, which brings you back to the timeline, to bring you back to see other things up and down in the infinite scroll. And it could be Randy and Sarah are in a relationship now. Wouldn't you like to know about it? Or how did you not know? Relationships are not official until they're Facebook official. Am I right? Then there is the direct message. The message that I send to my friend that I want no one else to know about, Facebook sets this up so that I can send a direct message to a friend and they can respond back. And it's yet another way for me to keep engaged with this platform, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, that kind of thing. Then folks at Facebook and certainly Twitter and things like that, they are even doing scientific A/B testing of little elements of their design, of their platform, of the way users interact with things. And it serves a couple reasons, or a couple purposes, I guess. One, they want to know how to keep you better, or keep you more engaged with their platform. And they want to know what users will use more of. So they test things out: colors, text options, No news feed is the same for the next guy because they're testing so many different things to make sure that what they have as their product is optimized for the most amount of people to spend the most amount of time on. And really, that's your user experience. You have notifications, you've got tags, people have tagged you in things. You can never get to the bottom of the internet. You're just constantly scrolling. You are presented with ellipsy bubbles to keep you glued to your phone or your tablet or, you know, whatever your device of choice is. You get memories. You get things that promote you to keep engaged with the platform by the past. You get to directly engage with people through direct messages. You can see what other people have done on your news feed. Like Hannah is tagged in a photo. Randy and Sarah are in a relationship now. How did you not know this? And finally, they are all making these little scientific A/B tests on how to optimize the experience so that you will spend more time on their platform. So what is all this doing? Well, Tristan Harris, who is featured in the film, said that, and he worked with Google and he designed some things at Google and he really was instrumental in some of the things that they were doing. He said that the goal was to implant an unconscious habit or desire for you to engage. Think about it. Social media companies know that they've been successful when you have your phone or your tablet, whatever your device is, in plain view, on the coffee table, on the dinner table, on the end table, somewhere next to you, and you have this subconscious urge to pick it up and check Facebook. This is interesting if you look at it from not a marketer's perspective, but from a design perspective, from the perspective of the user, and really detach yourself from your experience and see what it is for what it is, what is actually going on. And you know that it's successful because there are billions of people out in the world who are addicted to their phone. And the thing that I find most comical about this, guys and gals, people, folk, all you people listening to the sound of my voice, that even while I was preparing for this podcast episode, what I was doing was watching the video on Netflix on my computer and then typing notes in Evernote for me to keep track of what I was thinking, highlights of what I was learning and things that I wanted to make mention of in this show. Netflix was even engaged in a little persuasive technology design itself, because every time I took my mouse cursor, my little arrow or my finger, whatever it was, off the screen to go into Evernote to type something, Netflix sensed that my mouse was off the browser window on my computer and then automatically overlaid an overlay that had the title and the description and kind of grayed out. And I thought, man, if this isn't anything to prove, I don't know what is. Because to get that overlay off my screen and see like the actual documentary, I had to move my cursor from what I was working on to the window that had the content that it wanted me to watch and click inside it to get that overlay out. Thought, man, I need to bring this up in my podcast episode. So here I am. All these things are designed for the user, not for their user's benefit necessarily. It's to the user's attention span. It's to draw their attention and to keep their attention. I thought, man, this was terrible. So I'm going to butcher this, and I even looked on YouTube for the proper pronunciation of this man's name. But Chamath Palihapitiya, who was the VP of growth at Facebook, says that we wanted to figure out how to manipulate you psychologically and afterward give you that dopamine hit. I'm going to find, I'm going to play the soundbite in a minute that I thought was most telling, but we'll get there in a minute. But before we do, we're going to take a short break and get back to the program. This episode of Marketing Distilled is sponsored by Evernote. With our lives becoming more complex every day, Evernote helps you make sense of it all and avoid overwhelm. Capture, sort, and use all the information you encounter during your day. Ideas, emails, documents, websites, pictures, audio, and more. Stay on top of your to-do list by creating tasks that live inside your notes. Link those notes to calendar events so that you're prepared for every meeting. And see it all in a convenient, customizable dashboard. Once you capture something in Evernote, it's saved forever. Powerful search functionality makes it easy to find what you need later, so Evernote becomes your second brain, where you can not only store information, but connect those ideas and put them to work for you. With Evernote, you can remember everything, be more productive, and accomplish anything. Get started today by going to jonathangabey.com/evernote to sign up for an account today. That's jonathangabey.com/EVERNOTE. Well, thanks for coming back to the program. This is the Marketing Distilled podcast, and we're talking about the marketer's dilemma. I just expressed to you and kind of shared with you the social media company's business model that they go through to make money. And I also shared with you kind of a bird's eye view on what users experience and why they experience it. And in this next point I want to discuss with you is really the psychological effects of the social business model for society in the greater perspective of things, like another big picture view of how social media affects society. When you watch the show The Social Dilemma, the documentary opens the section of this program with the quote, and quote, "There are only two industries that call their customers, quote, users, and those are illegal drugs and software companies." And that quote was from Edward Tufte. They call him E.T. He was a data analyst, data visualization person who studied under Ronald Dahl, I believe. Anyway, that's a big thing about this section is that, you know, really we're users, and the only users there are in industry are illegal drugs, cocaine, marijuana, that kind of thing, and software companies. So while there are many studies and reports out there that can address more fully the effects of social media on society at large, and that's certainly not going to be the scope and the meat of this episode, because I'm not going to be able to put any finer point on it other than reporting to you what I've learned from this documentary. A fellow that I just recently heard about, Jonathan Haidt, is a psychologist at New York University, and he's really come to the forefront of the research in this area of psychology and anxiety, depression, and the effects of society. He said that there is a gigantic increase in depression and anxiety for teenagers that began around 2011 and 2013. Hate, and by way of this documentary, states that since 2009, there has been a 62% increase in girls aged 15 and 19, and an astounding 189% increase in girls 10 to 14 years old for hospital admissions for non-fatal self-harm in the United States, cutting themselves, doing self-damage to themselves. And then Jonathan, Dr. Haight, he also says that for suicide rates in the same segment of girls, those being 15 to 19 and 10 to 14 years of age, there has been a 70% increase in deaths for 15 to 19 year olds and 151% for girls in the 10 to 14 year old bracket in the same time frame. These are suicide rates, young girls killing themselves. And Haight finally says that the Generation Z folks are the first generation that got on social media in middle school. And he says that this is around 2009. And he says that this generation are more anxious, fragile, and depressed. And I think it's true. I mean, I worked with teenagers and people who are certainly in this age bracket at a former employment experience of mine, that we stressed that people are more anxious, people are more depressed, people just need more clarity, need more certainty. And we did a lot to try to get people to just get off their phones and to enjoy life a little bit more. And we still had to deal with that issue. But frankly, listener, let's call what social media is. It's created for ourselves an addiction. You know it. I know it. You see it everywhere. People are always on their phones, checking their accounts, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and the list goes on. You walk in any store, people are on their phones. You walk in, and even in the days now where, you know, you might not be convinced, or, you know, you might have the rare occasion to go out to eat somewhere, you see couples and families all with their phones out eating dinner. And the same thing is true that, you know, you sit around the dinner table when kids are home, and when mom and dad are back from work or closing up shop at their home office. And what are they doing? What do you see them do? They're all on their phones. They're all on Facebook. They're all on Twitter. The kids are on TikTok watching the next 7 second hit. And if that's not enough, let's just take a look at what Ann Lemke from the Stanford School of Medicine has said. She's essentially declared that social media is a drug. And don't you think that that's correct? Social media is a drug. So finally, the very subjects they interview, these guys like Tristan Harris and Azra Raskin, Tim Kendall. I'm going to pull up my other note here to get a real good list of names here. Those are like Tristan Harris, who used to work at Google, Jeff Siebert, former Twitter executive, Bailey Richardson, who worked at the early days on Instagram, Tim Kendall, who was, I think he was in Pinterest, and then he was, he invented the very business model of the ad revenue and the news feed. Roger McNamee, who was the Silicon Valley investor who supported all these things. All these people are on the program saying that they themselves fight their own addictions. Tim Kendall, former Pinterest executive said that he himself has found himself addicted to Pinterest, the very service that he works for that earns him this massive living. Ezra Raskin, the guy who invented the infinite scroll, admitted that he had found himself to be addicted to Twitter and Reddit and even had to code things in his own phone, in his own computer, his own devices to prevent him from scrolling through Reddit. And then Tristan Harris says he's addicted to his email. So many of these executives who work for or have worked for these social media companies don't even allow their own children on their on phones or social media. Jonathan Haidt, he said that there should be certain parameters of whether or not someone should be even allowed to have a mobile phone or to get on social media. He said that they should at least be in high school and that he should that they should at least be 16. And there's another thing in there, but I can't remember. So we know that this stuff is addictive. We just know it. Everybody, I mean, I don't have to prove this to you at all. And if that's not enough for me to convince you, I'm going to play a clip by Chamath Palihapitiya, the former VP of Facebook, who was in charge of growing Facebook into more of a company. There's a clip that he shares that he talked to Stanford Business School in like a where are you now kind of thing. View from the top, I think, is the video that it's called. I'm going to play that clip in just a moment.
Right? We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it. Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people. And then think about how people react then to the perceptions of others. It's really bad.
This episode of Marketing Distilled is brought to you by WP Engine. WP Engine is the world's leading WordPress digital experience platform that gives enterprises and agencies the agility, performance, intelligence, and integrations they need to drive their business forward faster. WP Engine's combination of tech innovation and an award-winning team of WordPress experts is trusted by over 60,000 companies across over 140 countries to provide counsel and support to help brands create world-class digital experiences. I use WP Engine exclusively because of their strength in using WordPress and their unbeatable support when I need help. Get started by visiting jonathangabey.com/WP Engine. That's jonathangabey.com/WP Engine. So far, we've discussed a lot that is illustrated in the Social Dilemma documentary by Netflix. And in this section, as we bring it to a close, I want to ask the question, what are marketers to do in light of what the Social Dilemma documentary illustrate and describe for us? Now that we have a clear view on the business model, the user experience, and then the social impact of social media, we now see the various actors at play in this space. We see that social media companies are driven by engagement, growth, and ad revenue. We know that social media companies that are publicly traded are charged with making shareholders and investors money. We know that the user's experience and how social media companies create addicting experiences for billions of people. We know that society is suffering and is radically changed as a result of social media. We also know that marketing agencies, companies, freelance social media consultants, and other people that want to drive business results sustain these social media companies by the ads they pay them. There's a lot going on for sure. So if people associated with the documentary, The Social Dilemma, are right, then it's clear that there needs to be a radical shift from what is the status quo to a new approach. Several people in the documentary point to a new business model. Others point to governmental regulation. Still others, like Jaron Lanier, propose that we should all just delete our social media accounts and have nothing to do with social media any longer. So what are marketers who are part of the social media ecosystem to do and consider? We know that marketers hold themselves to a high ethical standard. I think at least they should. At the very least, marketers should be aware of the position they hold and how they contribute to the overall problem within social media. Clearly, when an ad agency or marketing department decide to add to their marketing mix ads on Facebook targeting their ideal customer, lookalike audience, or segment, the money they pay social media companies help fuel the system as it exists today. On one extreme, social media marketers are the enablers and financiers of a new insidious drug that is unregulated, ubiquitous, and affects everyone. Maybe this is the new expression of ad agencies who market cigarettes. From where I sit, there are several similarities. Today, marketers of soap and shampoo who have the goal in mind of raising revenue and return on ad spend may not realize until now, through their ad spend, they are somehow contributing to suicide rates of teenage and young girls. If this is where you sit, that marketers are in fact enablers and financiers by supporting Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok through buying ads, then there is a lot of work for you to do. You should summarily rethink your marketing strategy to remove social media ads completely. You allocate your money elsewhere and really adjust your marketing strategy as a whole. You'd have to double down on SEO to your website, which you still play the social media game if you concentrate on Google, or you'd also have to double down on your work on email marketing, programmatic, and other avenues. But as I sit here, I'm dismayed. Because it seems that every channel possible for marketing in the mix is somehow affected by an algorithm. The Social Dilemma explains that the algorithm is portrayed as a soulless seeker of the social media goal, and that is to grab the user's attention and to keep it. It does not matter what the subject or effect is, only that the user's attention is captured and kept. Maybe in a future episode, I will bring someone else on to discuss a marketing mix that is free from the algorithm application and what that would look like. But you may not have the same conclusion. What's the other extreme? Well, certainly there are a lot of good that is to be had in using social media. At the beginning of the documentary, subjects like Tim Kendall and Tristan Harris, they all start by describing the massive benefits of social media. Things like being reunited with lost family members that they never thought that they had or lost touch with, locating suitable organ donors for people who needed it to live and to survive, and of course, the ability for relatives to stay connected with family members who live halfway across the world. There's a lot of good to see and to have on social media, but there's always been a fine line between the good and the bad of social media. And I suspect, as with anything in the world, moderation is the key to nearly everything. By funding Facebook and Twitter and others, you keep this kind of system alive and help more people. As marketers, we're supposed to be able to use the foundations of place, promotion, price, and product to connect with your ideal customer. Using social media ads is the perfect way to connect your product to the right consumer and to grow your business and brand. You probably think about the algorithm altruistically, that it's meant for the win-win-win. That is, you help customers win by getting a good product in their hands. You win by growing your business and doing your part in the world. And you help the world win by continuing the human quest for self-development, enjoyment, and more. whatever the answer is, it's probably somewhere in the middle. Social media might not be the evil that some purport it to be. True, we have always seen society become engrossed in one thing or another. Memes on social media juxtapose photos of people riding the New York subway train with all their eyes glued to a little light box held in the palm of their hands, with a black and white photo of people in the same subway system, all with newspapers in their hands reading the news of the day before they head into work or home. There are clear differences, though, between a newspaper and a phone. But for the sake of society, we realize that each generation has to deal with societal phenomena as best as we can. But some rightly argue, I think, that we are no match for the algorithm and computers with increasing processing power. So this has been the Marketing Distilled Podcast, and I wanted to conclude by offering some thoughts to you today. I hope that this episode has helped my fellow marketers gain a fresh perspective on the nature of social media, and at least get them out of their rut of thinking about social media in the terms of ads, campaigns, ad sets, copy, creative, and the basic things of marketing on social. I hope that you have a better appreciation for the business model, the user's experience, and the effects social media has on society as a whole. I hope that I have asked the deeper question, though, about the ethics of marketing and how marketers play a part. We as marketers are not free from this dilemma. In fact, we are most assuredly a key actor in the problem. Or conversely, we are part of the efforts that are working to improve society and the world every day. I'm curious, listener, where do you stand on the issue? Have you watched The Social Dilemma? What do you think? What did you learn? Are you thinking about critical and the ethical concerns that you face as a marketer? Where do you stand on the issue? For me, I'm considering rethinking my personal social media use. I know that I have the agency to control my personal social media consumption, and know that I still need to have accounts on social media for my work and exploration. For me, I think I need to expand my boundaries between me and my devices and my consumption of social media. I am currently reading Jaron Lanier's book and have a lot to consider. I've been tempted many times to downgrade my phone to a dumb phone or some sort of a way to curb my addiction, among other changes. Finally, I'd love to know what you think. Would you please email me at contact@jonathangabey.com your thoughts? Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.